The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, it all kind of makes perfect sense, I think. You have the world's greatest superpower now entering into this period of electoral limbo, and it comes during a year that has been just full of chaos and disorder. Here we are again. Now we have a hotly disputed election in the United States, something that's going to probably carry on for a number of days at least. And then, oh, by the way, tomorrow right here in the United Kingdom, we revert back to a national lockdown. So welcome to 2020. The chaos continues. Well, we'll try to make some sense of the whirlwind of events. One programming note, by the way, Trumpet Hour today is going to be a live broadcast. I think Richard Palmer from here at Edstone will also be joining in on the fun with those back in Edmond. So you'll want to listen to that after this program ends. So you've got 2 hours, the next 2 hours of live programming here on KPCG and KPCG.fm, the live stream there, and at thetrumpet.com. Website. Well, my experience through the night, most of the night, Fox News was nice enough to have its live feed free for anyone to view. And but I have to say, just watching Fox, really, really dreadful. Just the coverage through the night, and we talked last night, or rather yesterday, on the program, just about all that this president is going up against. And you really see just how, even with Fox News and all of these officials that are there to decide, you know, when to call what particular state. I was tuning in and seeing the numbers coming in from Florida and from Texas and from Ohio. And I was just sitting there going, why would they wait so long to make it official for Florida when he's that far out in front? I think he ended up winning by 300,000 or 400,000 votes. Massive turnout on the whole, by the way. They were very quick, the networks, to call states like Virginia for Biden. Just it took them a few seconds, I suppose. And in the case of Fox News, they called Arizona right away. And that had the Trump administration up in arms. Why are you calling it so soon? There's like a million votes left to be counted. This was what, with respect to Florida, this is what Governor Ron DeSantis tweeted out. He said, President Trump is up in Florida by almost 400,000 votes with more than 90% of precincts reporting. Why haven't networks called the race? It's a done deal. And the refusal to recognize the obvious speaks volumes about the lack of objectivity of these outlets. A refusal to recognize the obvious. There was no way with that 10% left. There was no way for Joe Biden to make up the difference. Florida should have been one of the first states, certainly one of the first battleground states to be called. And it should have happened early on. Eastern time. It should have been around 8 p.m., 8:30 p.m. Instead, it was hours later, hours later. Texas, I think the president there ended up winning by something like 700,000 votes. 4 years ago, it was 800,000. But we were told all the way up to Texas, or all the way up to this election, Texas is in play. Texas, I think it was the Drudge Report last week that said Texas is a toss-up. And so the networks waited and waited and waited. The governor of Texas called up President Trump, as I understand it, to congratulate him on the victory, to congratulate him on winning Texas. And still the networks had not yet called Texas. Texas, which votes Republican just about every time. And then you have this Arnon Mishkin. He's heading up the decision desk at Fox News. He's the one that's calling the states or not calling the states. And they brought him in, the panel. It was led by Bret Baier and Martha McCallum, I think it was. And they were asking him, well, how come you chose Arizona so soon? And there's quite a few people in the Trump administration that are unhappy about that. And so he explained the reasoning. Well, there's this, 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 and this. And so then Bret Baier switched over to Ohio and said, well, okay, if he's way out in if Biden's way out in front there, then why haven't you called Ohio? Because the president's way out in front there. And then he gave some kind of response, and they moved on. But even still, with the convincing victory in Florida and winning all of those Hispanic votes in Miami-Dade County, and then following through with Texas and with Ohio, I was sitting there thinking, well, this is very similar to the path that the president was on back in 2016. This was how he defeated Hillary Clinton. George Stephanopoulos noted this as well over at ABC. Here's clip one.
Let's try to do a little bit. This is looking a little bit right now like a replay of 2016.
It's looking like a replay of 2016 where President Trump went right through the Rust Belt. And of course, you knew that was the strategy because that's where all the rallies have been the last couple weeks. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. He even went as far as Minnesota. He didn't end up winning Minnesota. But here it was. It was moving along almost like a replay of 2016. The president looked like he was just right on the cusp of yet another historic victory. And then all of a sudden, everything just stopped. It just stopped. The counting stopped, particularly in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. The counting just ended. It was like the night froze. And when it did, at the time, President Trump, he was up 1.5, I think, in North Carolina. He was up 2.5 in Georgia. He was up 4 in Wisconsin, 7.5 in Michigan. And he was up 12.6 points, 12.6% in Pennsylvania. And then everything just ended. It was like the night, as I say, was frozen. Listen to this from The Hill. This is with respect to Pennsylvania. It says, election officials in a key Pennsylvania county said early Wednesday morning that they would pause vote counting for about 8 hours until they reconvened later in the day. An announcement that comes as the tightening presidential race comes down to a handful of battleground states. This is from, when has this ever happened? We were told all the way up to this point, this is an historic election, the most important election perhaps in America's history. And then here comes this county in Pennsylvania, and they decide, you know what, we need to send everyone home. I guess they're all a little bit tired. They've been working hard. Let's just come back Wednesday. Let's come back sometime midday Wednesday, or I guess it was 10 a.m., that's covered in the rest of the article. It says vote counts in Pennsylvania came in far slower than did counts in many other states Tuesday evening, due in large part to allowing all voters to cast mail-in ballots for the first time amid the coronavirus pandemic. It says Trump was leading Biden by roughly 700,000 votes in Pennsylvania as of 2:10 a.m. Just think about how unusual this is. You had President Trump leading in all these states. And then, of course, they're all toss-ups. You can't call them. You certainly can't call Pennsylvania. And it's true that some of these that haven't been counted yet are probably, you know, in heavily Democratic areas. But to make up 700,000 votes, to make up 600,000, what is going on? And then when you think about the stories we heard before the election about the Supreme Court even weighing in on Pennsylvania rules, saying that, well, you can count ballots up to 3 days after the election. It's almost like the state did not want to count the votes on election night. They did not want to see those percentages go up for President Trump. Let's wait it out. Let's see what happens. And you know what? North Carolina, The president has a lead there with just a few percentage points or a few precincts left. And they too, for whatever reason, I didn't even have time to read all of the reasoning, but they too put it on hold. And they also, I think theirs goes on for 6 days where they can just bring in ballots 6 days after Election Day. Now, with respect to Pennsylvania, you had CNN's John King who said, even if there's over 1 million votes left, I mean, Biden's going to have to win something like 80%, 80% of those remaining ballots to overtake Donald Trump. Florida had 12 million ballots to count, and they got it done, and the networks should have called it even sooner than they did. But in these other states, boy, they're going to drag this out. So this is what some of the activity that led up to the president making his statement. I'll play his clip first, but he followed actually Joe Biden, who made a brief statement in the middle of the night too, before he retired for the evening. But then here's President Trump at the White House after these strange events had happened. Clip two.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. So our goal now is to ensure the integrity for the good of this nation. This is a very big moment. This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list, okay? It's a very sad moment.
And so that statement there, among other things he said, really had the heads exploding at all of the news networks. As they said, who does he think he is to come out and all but announce that he won and to say that he was, you know, way out in front in some of these states, and then everything just stopped all of a sudden. But when you think back over what's, you know, you had the storyline of it's going to be a landslide for Biden. That went on for months, and we'll get to that in just a second. But together with that, there were also the statements from the Biden people saying that in no way, shape, or form should he concede on election night. So on the one hand, they thought it was just going to be a landslide for Joe Biden. But if it was close, if somehow President Trump pulled through, don't concede, because there's another way. There's a backup plan. There's an insurance policy. And we can win this. We can win this in the courts. Remember what Hillary Clinton said back in, I guess this goes back a month or so ago, clip seven.
So we've got to have a massive legal operation. And I know the Biden campaign is working on that. You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out. And eventually, I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
So it was meant to drag out. And that's what Pennsylvania is doing. They've got an attorney general that just despises President Trump. And then so many of these states have Democrat governors as well. And then they've got all these rules, these new rules, to allow for ballots to just keep coming in days after the election. And John Roberts has been all over the place, siding with the authorities there in Pennsylvania, the courts, I should say, and yet not doing it in Wisconsin. But remember that quote from my father. I forget which article this was in, May of 2018, so it was probably the Saving America piece. He said, "We're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and to stay in power. They will do anything." Keep that in mind. They'll do anything to win this. And what you heard from the president, he's prepared to fight back. He believes they're going to be trying to cheat, and that they're going to have to go and figure this out in the courts. Now, just as a, you know, as an American, you go into an election night thinking that, well, at least you hope it's decisive. You hope it's a smooth transfer of power. It certainly wasn't that way last time. And so I suppose in some senses we should not have expected it to be this time. There's always a bunch of unknowns, for sure. But at the same time, they telegraphed the strategy, or at least one of the strategies, and that was to drag this out. That's what Hillary Clinton said. That's what Biden's campaign manager said just yesterday. I played this on the program yesterday, clip 6.
Under no scenario will Donald Trump be declared a victor on election night. And we think that that's really fundamental to how we want to approach tomorrow.
So that was just this week. And now if you go back to September 23rd, this was, again, around the time when it was after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. President Trump came out, despite all these protests from the left, and said that, no, we've got to replace her. And one reason we need to do it is because of all of these strategies, if you can even call them that, these efforts to cheat in the upcoming election. He said we need a ninth of justice on the court because they've said what they're going to do. Here's what the president said back on September 23rd, clip 8.
I think it's very important. I think this will end up in the Supreme Court, and I think it's very important that we have 9 justices because I think this scam that the Democrats are pulling, it's a scam. The scam will be before the United States Supreme Court. And I think having a 4-4 situation is not a good situation. If you get that, I don't know that you'd get that. I think it should be 8-0 or 9-0. But just in case it would be more political than it should be, I think it's very important to have a ninth justice.
Important to have a ninth because he said, I think this could end up in the Supreme Court. And then so last night he says, you know, we're going to go to the Supreme Court and ensure the integrity of this election. As I said, that statement that the president made last evening, it was after Joe Biden had come out for some remarks in Wilmington. Here's what he had to say, clip 9.
I'm here to tell you tonight, we believe we're on track to win this election.
So that's fine. For him to say, you know, we're winning or I'm going to win, it's okay. Now, if President Trump says that, I've got a clip from Savannah Guthrie. She came in and interrupted the president's statement. She said, basically, I've just got to interrupt him because he's just telling so many lies. I'll get to that in just a bit. But listen again to what Mr. Biden said last evening, clip 10.
We knew because of the unprecedented early vote and the mail-in vote, that it's going to take a while. We're going to have to be patient until the hard work of tallying the votes is finished. And it ain't over till every vote is counted. Every ballot is counted.
And so that's what the Democrats are going to be crying for. Every ballot needs to count. Even ones that come in late. We've got to count those as well. Be patient. Be patient. This could take a while. It didn't take so long in Florida, but in Pennsylvania, where we have these other rules, in North Carolina, I mean, this could really go on for quite some time. So just be patient, everybody. Be patient. This was from Axios earlier this week, or last week, I think it was. It says, if news organizations declare Joe Biden the mathematical president-elect, he plans to address the nation as its new leader, even if President Trump continues to fight in court, advisors tell Axios. So it's all part of the strategy. Just wait it out. You know you've got the media on your side. You know you've got the attorney general in Pennsylvania on your side, and the governor in North Carolina. Just wait it out, and then if it's finally declared. Now remember, big tech and all of them, they were saying if President Trump came out and declared victory, well, they'd blot it out. They'd prevent those tweets from going out. So here's what he's going up against. And then you've got the Supreme Court, at least before the ninth was nominated and confirmed, in there really muddying the water. This was from Andy McCarthy. A couple weeks ago, he says he was talking about how the Supreme Court needs to weigh in on election law cases now before the election, before November 3rd. You don't want it to drag out, he said. Now that's actually what's happening. But he says here, this is Andy McCarthy, the rudimentary questions that need to be decided are obvious, and I'm not suggesting that the court act illegitimately by issuing an advisory opinion. There are concrete cases that are ripe for resolution. It's imperative that the justices address them now when the reality and the overwhelming public perception would be that the court is simply deciding procedural issues attendant to voting. If they wait until after November 3rd and these issues are still pending, and that's what happened. That's what happened. The Supreme Court was weak. They didn't stand up. They didn't stand firm. And so now it's going to come back. They just kind of kicked the can down the road, hoping that they wouldn't have to deal with it again. Now it's probably going to come back. It says it will mean there's a raging controversy over who won the presidency. At that point, the court would be perceived as deciding the election. No one should want that. Not the court, not the candidates, not the nation. It says the main question that has to be decided is, what is Election Day? That determines when we must vote. I mean, there has to be a deadline. Otherwise, it could just carry on forever. There has to be a deadline. At some point, it has to stop and then everything be counted. But now we'll see. If it does drag on, as the left was saying, if it gets into the courts, who's going to accept it as legitimate? You think then finally, if that's the course that it's on, you think then finally that one side or the other will be happy with the decision? I was thinking about that chapter in the Ezekiel booklet on Ezekiel 4 and 5, the oncoming civil war. Boy, you see two sides. And their heels are dug in, and they couldn't be further apart. The contrast couldn't be more stark. As I say, everything, you had the stock market was going crazy yesterday. You had the Chinese currency was plummeting because everybody was under the assumption that this is a replay of 2016. Then he wins Florida easily. Then he wins Ohio easily, the president, that is. And then everything comes screeching to a halt. What happened? Well, as I said yesterday, there's a spirit world for sure. Satan's the god of this world, but I also brought out yesterday that, and this is of great comfort, of course, to God's people, we don't have to meddle in this mess, and that's what it is. It's a complete and total mess. What a system. But step back and consider Daniel 2 and verse 21, it says, and he changes times and seasons. He removes kings, it says, speaking of God, and he sets up kings. He removes them, he sets them up. I gave you that verse yesterday from Romans 13. God's the one. I mean, he does intervene where necessary, and that's something that we can be certain of. He'll intervene where necessary to help further his work, the work of his church. We always know this. That's our anchor, that faith in God's word, that sure word of Bible prophecy. There was another verse in Daniel 4, if I can find it. Daniel 4 and verse 17, it says, this matter is by the decree of the watchers. And well, further on, it says, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will and sets up over it the basest of men. You see this example or examples of this in the book of Daniel. You see it elsewhere where, like with God intervening in the case of those Jews that returned to Babylon to rebuild the temple, moving Cyrus, his human spirit, to allow for that, to even support that trek back to the land of Israel. In any event, how deeply divided we are as a nation, and it's only going to get. When you see how it played out last night, even if it's not what you were hoping for as an American citizen, when you see how that it played out, particularly with all that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, this is nothing has come easy for this particular administration. Nothing has come easy for this president. He has had to fight for every victory, small and great, everything in between. He's had to fight for it. And that's the tone that he certainly took when he spoke last night, that he's willing to fight for this. If it does come down to something similar to 1960 when, you know, Richard Nixon finally stepped aside and said, well, fine, let him have it, JFK, even though there was all these reports of cheating in Illinois and such. If we know one thing about this president, he seems to be willing to take them on. It's going to be interesting to watch and also sad and tragic at the same time. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the media coverage leading up to the election and focus in particular on the polling and all the polls that got this not just wrong, but wrong in a spectacular kind of way. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Yesterday, I referred to this article by Victor Davis Hanson about Donald Trump, the counter-revolutionary, and how that he's pushed back against all these forces that are out to destroy him. Hanson asks, what tools did Donald Trump have to wage these many counter-revolutions? The media? America's Fortune 400? Academia? The great foundations? The nation's think tanks? The bipartisan government establishment? The international community, the banks, Wall Street, corporate CEOs, Silicon Valley, professional sports, the entertainment industry, Hollywood, the intelligence community, the current and retired top military brass, Hanson says, in fact, none of them. He had none of this. He had no support from any of these groups, from any of these organizations. None whatsoever. And really, when you think of it, it's truly remarkable that he has such fervent support from half the country. You certainly saw that, as I've noted before, in the many rallies that he had. This is from Molly Hemingway. She said, this was before the election, writing last week. She said, yes, the media are rigging the election against half the country. Here's how. And this is the article. The media are doing everything in their power to make sure that their preferred candidate wins and that their arch enemy, Donald Trump, loses They're coddling Biden, refusing to ask him any hard questions about his policies, his plans, or his family being investigated for money laundering. It says further on, they've gone overtime to influence public opinion with their emphasis on polls, despite the problems with those polls. They've hidden Trump accomplishments and enthusiasm. They've pushed outlandish conspiracy theories that many Americans believe to this day. And they've encouraged social media companies to suppress conservative arguments. She says, will that be enough for them to win the day? People will find out next week. We'll see next week if this carries them to victory. The last few days leading up to the election, I just made note of a few of the headlines that were coming in about the race, and in particular, the polls, who was leading, Scott Rasmussen. His final poll numbers had Biden winning at 51% to Trump's 44%. And as far as some of the crucial battleground states, his last poll put Joe Biden ahead in Florida by 4, ahead in Michigan by 7, ahead in Pennsylvania by 6, and ahead in North Carolina by 1. Iowa was even. I think Trump ended up winning Iowa by 7. He won Florida by 4. Coming in, the polls said he was going to lose Florida by 4. This was from the AP just before the election. Joe Biden entered Election Day with multiple paths to victory, while President Trump, playing catch-up in a number of battleground states, had a narrower but still feasible road. Last week, if you went to the Drudge Report, this was last Friday, just three, four days before the election, there was a big banner headline, President Ponders Defeat. He's pondering defeat. There was a headline on October 28th. Texas is a toss-up. The president won that by 800,000 4 years ago. This time around, about 700,000. Not a huge change. But Texas was a toss-up. Texas! That's right. That's what we were told. It was, a neck-and-neck race. This was from Drudge Report just before the election day. This was Monday night. It says, USC final, most accurate poll of 2016 shows Biden plus 11. Biden plus 11. And it's barely budged since August. August, September, October, and then right into election day. Just a double-digit lead all the way through. I mentioned that Washington Post poll on Wisconsin, the 17-point lead that Biden had just a week or so ago. The Economist, on October 27th, I think I've given this to you before, so this is a week before the election, Joe Biden had a 96% chance of winning, and Donald Trump had a 4% chance of winning. Last night, I heard a soundbite from Jake Tapper where he said that, you know, this idea that Joe Biden was going to win in a landslide, that was always a pipe dream for the Democrats. I mean, we understood that it wouldn't be that. We knew it would be razor thin, the margin. Really? Because for months we heard that it was a double-digit lead. That he was going to start in Florida, Biden was, then Ohio, and then just take the whole evening. Landslide. At 538, he gets lots and lots of praise. Nate Silver, at 538, he's loved by the left for his predictions, which are flat out wrong so much of the time. He said last week, we're in the last full week before Election Day, and Joe Biden leads in both national and state polls. At this point, though, President Trump needs a big polling error in his favor if he's going to win. He needs a big polling error in his favor. How, though, did all those polls, how does that work in his favor in under any circumstances? If you ask me, if Biden's up double digits for 3 months, that seems to favor Biden. That seems to give Biden momentum. That would seem to discourage, you know, people from even going out and voting if they supported Donald Trump. This is what Nate Silver said on October 26th. Again, the one who runs 538. It says, if the polls aren't tightening since the debate, and with 62 million people having voted, we're sort of getting to the point where the only way Trump can win is with a major polling error bigger than 2016, or if the election is stolen somehow. He puts that in parentheses. Really, you know, what I'm beginning to see here is that the only way that President Trump can win is if he steals it. And really, if you look at that statement, just analyze it for what it says at face value. Now knowing what we know, it's almost exactly the opposite. If polls aren't tightened, well, I don't need to reread it again, but Tucker Carlson last night, the panel, as I said, was pretty bad. Certainly the election desk was terrible for Fox News, but the few times that I heard Tucker Carlson came on, he really had some excellent points to make. Here's what he has to say about the polls leading up to the election and then what actually happened or was happening through the election night. Clip four.
But I just cannot get over my total surprise at the disconnect between what we're watching on the screen and what has been confidently predicted across the media landscape for months, that there was a very good chance of a blue wave, of a total Biden blowout, of an early night. And I could get much more specific about this, and I think we'll probably spend the next couple of months doing that because it's worth doing. But suffice it to say, and anyone watching and who's consumed any media this year knows that the media, even on the basis of the data we have now, got it really wrong. And they'll claim they didn't because they always do, but they did. And we know that.
They got it wrong. Flat out wrong. That's happened now twice in a row. It happens all the time. And they're never, never, never held to account. That really, never mind what might happen in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. But that really is one of the big storylines from the whole evening. All of these media mouthpieces, all of these pollsters telling us repeatedly that the president's pondering defeat days before the election. It's looking really bad. He might give up. And then all those percentages, double-digit lead. And it's really been that way for months. That's what they were saying constantly. One more clip from Tucker last night, clip five.
I would say in some very specific ways, we, the media, I participated in it for 30 years, have not been credible. We have lost trust. And that's just, I think that's really bad. And it's something that we need to fix. And the obvious problem is something we said we were going to correct in 2016, which is we don't know anybody who votes for Trump. And so you really got the sense watching everybody that, like, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to support Trump or whatever. And that's why the rallies were such a huge shock to a lot of people in the last week. All these people unapologetically saying, I love Donald Trump. And it's like, I've never met anybody who says something. Who are these people? We have a huge problem in our business with being cut off from the country we cover.
They're just totally out of touch with the country that they're supposed to be covering. The country, it's their country too. And yet they're losing what little credibility they had left. It's gone. It's gone. They keep getting it wrong. And they never, never apologize for it. They're never repentant. As Tucker said in that first clip, I mean, they're going to say that they didn't get it wrong, but they did. They did. When the president gave his remarks last evening, listen to Savannah Guthrie as she interrupts him and gets the camera back focused on her. Clip three.
I've been saying this from the day I heard they were going to send out tens of millions of ballots.
All right, we're listening to the president speaking at the White House, but we got to dip in here because there have been several statements that are just frankly not true.
I just thought that was especially rich because here she's breaking in, interrupting him, saying he didn't get it right. He didn't get it right. And look at their record. Like Tucker pointed out, look at what they keep doing over and again. Where's the media watchdog when you need them? There's not that many of them. There certainly aren't. And speaking of watchdogs, I sent out the trumpet brief last night about the resignation of Glenn Greenwald. When we come back, I'll just summarize some of the content from that and also play you a couple of pretty powerful clips that are from Fox News last week where Greenwald was announcing or explaining, rather, why he had to resign from the Intercept. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
One of the points that I made in that trumpet brief that went out last evening is that whoever ends up presiding over America's government, the government's, just speaking of it broadly, the government's character has already been determined. Like my father has said before, so much lawlessness has been exposed, so much corruption has been exposed. Glenn Greenwald, he was one of the co-founders of the Intercept, and he's known as an investigative reporter. He pays attention to government agencies. He sees himself as a watchdog of sorts. And if you look into his personal views, he comes from the liberal wing of the media. I think he used to write for the Guardian. He's perhaps best known for reporting on the National Security Agency's spying on Americans during the George W. Bush administration, and then on the massive spying scandal that went on during the Obama years. As I say, he helped found The Intercept back in 2014, and just a week ago, he quit. He resigned. They wouldn't print his article that was critical of the Biden family. You can't criticize the Biden family. This is what he said in his resignation. Well, he's talking about the article that The Intercept, the editors there, refused to publish. They said that they wouldn't do it unless he removed, quote, all sections critical of Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. I think this is Greenwald's explanation, not a direct quote from the editors. The candidate, vehemently supported by all New York-based Intercept editors involved in this effort of suppression. So the editors basically said, you can't publish this in our publication, or you can't publish this in the publication you founded. Can you believe this? They wouldn't even let him print it. He tried to work with the editors and said, well, hey, what if I print mine and then you print the rebuttal, you know, from someone else, or you write an answer just so that it's out there and then let the public decide. They said, no, you can't do it. Well, then what about if I go and take it to another publication? Nope, that would violate your contract. Can't do that either. It had to be completely silenced. It had to be completely blotted out. So he decided to resign in protest. He's one of the few journalists to stand up for constitutional protections like freedom of speech, like free press. As I say, he helped establish The Intercept at the very beginning. It was to be a whistleblowing outlet to expose corruption. What a perfect illustration of all that has been uncovered in recent years. Like my father said about the Russia hoax, the more that goes on, the more that these dirty cops continue with their investigating, the more we see and learn about their lawlessness and their corruption. This is how he explained his resignation. Greenwald writes, "The pathologies, illiberalism, and repressive mentality that led to the bizarre spectacle of my being censored by my own media outlet are ones that are by no means unique to The Intercept." Greenwald says, "These are the viruses that have contaminated virtually every mainstream center-left political organization, academic institution, and newsroom." So he sees the problem. It's not just a left-wing bias. It's an attempt to blot out the truth. And he talked about how that this Hunter Biden story that he had going, that was like the last straw for him. He just had to finally resign. He said this, "The brute censorship this week of my article about the Hunter Biden materials and Joe Biden's conduct regarding Ukraine and China, as well as my critique of the media's rank closing attempt in a deeply unholy union with Silicon Valley and the intelligence community to suppress its revelations, eroded the last justification I could cling to for staying." Just think about what he says there. He's talking about the media. He's talking about their alliance with Silicon Valley and with the intelligence community. And this is one of the things that he noted in his Fox News interview, was how that the media, they used to be skeptical of government institutions, particularly in the intelligence community. But now they're working together. Certainly they're working together in their obsession to destroy Donald Trump. They have been for years. So he went on Tucker Carlson's show last week to talk about his resignation from The Intercept. And here's what Mr. Greenwald had to say, clip 11.
"This is the real story of the last 4 years of the Trump administration, which is that for a long time on the left, there was a healthy skepticism of the CIA.
Yes, there was.
There was a lot of anti-war activism in the Bush and Cheney years. That has all disappeared. And the reason it's disappeared is because the CIA, from the very first days of the Trump administration, even before he was inaugurated, devoted themselves to sabotaging the administration because Donald Trump questioned just a few of their pieties. And that can't be done in Washington. Whoever does that must be destroyed. And so the CIA and the deep state operatives became heroes of the liberal left, the people who support the Democratic Party. They're now in a full union with the neocons, the Bush-Cheney operatives, the CIA, Silicon Valley, and Wall Street. That is the union of power, along with mainstream media outlets that are fully behind the Democratic Party, which is likely to at least take over one branch of government, if not all of them, in the coming election. And that is a very alarming proposition because they're authoritarian, they believe in censorship, and they believe in suppression of information that exposes them in any kind of a critical light."
That's someone who leans to the left politically, and yet he sees what the radical left is doing. And that's really an astounding statement to make, where he talks about the CIA working together. He mentions the deep state operatives. It wasn't that long ago when, you know, that was just kind of seen as a myth or a conspiracy theory of some sort. But again, I didn't have time to go back and look at some of the quotes from America Under Attack and some of the other things. I do have a quote here later from my father in that 2018 piece. But remember, too, what Victor Davis Hanson said about all of these institutions and agencies working against the executive branch of the American government. He co-founded The Intercept. He started it to serve as a watchdog of America's intelligence agencies. and look at him talk about this union of power that you see within the deep state. What a powerful, powerful union that is. One more clip from his interview last week, clip 12.
The law, though, and the obvious foundational prohibition on having a security state, a national security state after World War II, was it was never supposed to be turned domestically. They weren't supposed to be involved in our politics or disseminating propaganda. Go turn on any of those other cable networks or pick up the op-ed page of any of the biggest newspapers, and all you'll see are ex-members of the CIA, the DOJ, the FBI, the NSA telling Americans what they ought to believe. They've infiltrated the means of communication domestically. They do it through leaks, they do it through clandestine operations, and through lies. They propagandize the American people in a way that is incredibly dangerous, no matter what your ideology is.
So there he is again, talking about this union of power between all of these agencies, the media, CIA, DOJ, FBI, NSA, and how that the spying, obviously all these networks that you used to use to, you know, protect your nation or to help your nation, have turned inward, and now they're going after political opponents. So he's lived through this. He's seen, he's experienced it. Now again, just to remind you what the Trumpet has said, what my father has written, this article, Saving America from the Radical Left, temporarily, it's only temporary, says for 8 years under President Obama, the forces of the radical left were on the march, virtually unchecked. Even Republican leaders caved in. And that was after they had taken control of Congress and had a lot of power to stop the president. They just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't stand up to it. They just stepped aside. There's only a few, and we can name one in particular, that's been willing to take a stand. My father continued, just as there is a spiritual power behind this destructive force in America today, there is a spiritual reason that this force is being so dramatically exposed right now. It's because God wants it exposed, and he's exposing it. Since Donald Trump became president, the depth of lawlessness and corruption permeating America's leadership, aided by America's media, they're all in bed together. It's a union of power, an unholy union of power, you could say, aided by the media. This corruption is being uncovered, it says. As I wrote in that article, this is corruption on a deep level, so deep that most people won't even believe it. Well, he talks about the 2016 election. Again, there's a lot of this that ties right in with some of the things that we're seeing happen today. It says here, talking about the corruption, well, this is referring to that article. My father said, I hope to be able to put this up as one of my crowning achievements. This is quoting President Trump, actually. I hope to be able to put this up as one of my crowning achievements that I was able to, through the help of a lot of good people, expose something that is truly a cancer in our country. And then my father concludes here, God wanted the cancer exposed. We all need to think seriously about why and the responsibility that puts on us individually. You see, God wanted this cancer, this corruption, this evil exposed, and that's what, in a lot of ways, what our publications, what these programs that we've produced, what my father's program and the booklets, you think about Great Again and America Under Attack, there's quite a few of those articles, even though we've referred to them so many, many times before, that they would be good reading right about now in where we are with the United States of America. Well, I didn't bring any extra emails or letters with me. I could have taken up an extra couple minutes here for that. But since I don't have them, I'll finish just a couple of minutes early and go try to get a little bit of rest after a pretty long night last night. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Don't forget, Trumpet Hour is live. It's live today. That comes up at the top of the hour. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.